This is Gilbert Andrew Garcia with Tip from Gilbert, talk, inspiration, and prayer. Listen to my show every Monday from 11 to 12 on KWWJ, 1360 AM, KYOK, 1140 AM, KCOH at 1230KCOH.com, Sankeet Radio at 95.1 FM, 1460 AM, and Latino Sports, KEYH, 850 AM. Call in at 832-570-8075 and follow me on social media. See you then.
All right, Houston, it's Gilbert Garcia with another tip for me. Talk, inspiration, and prayer. Here we go. Now, I have one of those odd moments here where my guest is not here. So I have my old standby, my business partner, Ruby Dang. Ruby, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gilbert. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And you know what? You know what they say? The show must go
on. That's right.
Show must go on. And so I don't know what happened to him. He's a candidate for city council, so I don't know if that's a bad sign that he's not here. But that's okay, because maybe he will show up. So hopefully that's what we're going to do. So first of all, Ruby, you know, it was a busy weekend for the Dang family, I know, because you got a guest, a secret guest, showed up at your house.
Yeah, it was great. It was Friday evening. We were kind of winding down, having dinner, because we're empty nesters. Both kiddos are out of the house. And then around 9 in that evening, my daughter walked in. She is a junior at A&M University. She is in their engineering program, so I'm a proud mom. But she and her laundry walked in about 9 p.m., so it was
And the laundry said, "Hi, Mom."
Hi, Mom.
Isn't that funny how kids, they'll go to college, and, you know, especially those that are within, I don't know, 200 or 300 miles, the laundry just finds its way home and finds its way into your machine.
Yes, yes.
Well, you know what? That's what it's for. And, you know, of course, for me, I have four kids, and everybody knows on the air, I have four kids. And, of course, I have my oldest, who's a man. He's married. And, of course, they live in town, but they're moving to San Antonio, and I'm very bummed out about that. But he's in his low 30s. And then I have my son at Wall Street, Daniel Thomas, and he's an A&M grad, my first graduate from Oberlin College. And he's living the dream in New York City and all those sorts of things. And then, of course, I have my Ben Garcia. When he was running track, and I, of course, was the announcer at all the track meets, I would say, "Ben Garcia, come to the press box." And he would never come.
Right.
But I would say it to Juju Garcia, "Juju Garcia, come to the press box." And she would always come with like six of her friends. And they really would be all excited to be there at the top and hear me on the mic and all that kind of thing. And then my princess, of course, I'm just crying. Ruby, I am miserable. And those of you who are out there, if you're an empty nester, call in and tell us what you think about it. Because you know what? I'm taking it a lot harder than I ever imagined, Ruby.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because she's my baby, or I had four, or she's the only girl, or she happens to be my stay-up buddy, because my wife would always go to bed early. And my wife was interesting, because she could be at 9 o'clock with a remote control in her hand. And I know those of you on the radio can't really see this, but those of you on live can. She would just all of a sudden, her head would click, and she'd be asleep with a whole thing in her hand. And I would look at it, and I would be amazed that she would have the remote control in her hand, and she would just be asleep. But she goes to sleep early, and so Juju and I would watch all the horror flicks on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, that was what we would do. And now she's gone.
Yeah,
and my house is empty.
Yep.
And it's quiet. And when my wife and I get together for dinner, we look at each other and we stare at each other. And then we say, you know what? Let's call the kids. That's
yep,
what we do.
Yep.
Now, you've been an empty nester now a year? No, two years.
2 years, yes.
And, well, yeah. How's it been?
It's going okay.
Yeah?
I have replaced taking care of the kiddos than taking care of my parents, and now I'm taking care of mom. So I kind of haven't really felt the effects of being a complete empty nester, as I, you know, again, the markets are always busy, so we're busy here at work. And then when I'm home, I'm taking care of my parents.
You know what? So. If there's, we have one of our guests, and I won't remember her name now, but I'm embarrassed that I don't. And she talked about being a caretaker.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the right word?
Yeah, caretaker.
A caretaker for your parents and so forth. And what an incredible calling that is.
Yes.
And but you know what? It's a very difficult thing.
Yes.
Because it's difficult to see your parents. You know, you have this image of them when you're young, and all of a sudden they go back and revert back to their youth almost. And,
yeah.
And they're fragile, and they need help, and, you know, their mind is different. And, you know, that's got to be a very interesting feeling for you.
Right. And now, you have to have a ton of patience. Because
there you go.
It's very different. You can correct your child, but it's kind of hard to correct your parent, right, or discipline them. But it's really funny, like you said, revert, because historically, you know, when my kiddos were little, at this time we were figuring out Halloween costumes and what to do for Halloween. Well, that's what we were doing for Mom this weekend, because they have a Halloween party.
Oh,
we
wow.
have to go do a pumpkin carving. We have to do, get a Halloween costume. They keep them busy and active, and they really celebrate all the events, and Halloween being the next one coming up. So,
well, I have to say, obviously I'm your business partner, but more importantly, I see, and you are amazing, because you are there every day with your mom.
Yeah.
And she's how old?
95.
95 mm-hmm. years young.
Yes.
95 years young. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
And your father lived to what grand age?
He passed this February at 94.
94. And your mother-in-law is at what age?
98.
You know what that means? Claudia's going to be, you know, if they live to the 90s, Claudia's going to live to be like 110.
I know. I mean, tell her, start saving both of them.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Because Social Security, I don't know, at some point they're going to say, we're going to cut it off at 100.
Yep.
Because they're going to go the other way. Instead of just focusing on lifting the requirement to 75, 72, I mean 62, 65, 67, it'll be the other way. After 100, No mas. Because the government's running out of money.
Yep, yep.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the government in a moment. And I, of course, have to talk about the smartest guys in the rooms. And that always, and there's one in particular, Bill King. And it's like, he must just be miserable, because all he does is, he's infatuated or obsessed with Metro.
Mm-hmm.
And all he does is talk about Metro all the time.
Yep.
All the time. And I'm going to talk about that, because he wrote his blog something about Metro. And, of course, I got to correct the record all the time, because there's such misinformation about mm-hmm. Metro. And I don't know why you can't have an honest talk about Metro. You know,
right.
I just can't understand why. But let's go through. We have a Bobby on the line. Is there a Bobby on the line? Bobby, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Bob, you got me, Gilbert Garcia, with my one of my business partners, Ruby Dang. What do you got?
Well, Gilbert, I was... You know, I voted for you when you said, I want to be the mayor of A-Town. You remember that?
I do, my friend, and I appreciate you very much.
But anyway, Gilbert, I will go ask you, Gilbert, are you still loosely associated with Metro or not? But the main thing is being a man of God that you are. So, one time, this brother said, the big boy said, you know, I can't give the children's pearls to dogs, and so the dog said, but even the dog gets crumbs, and so Gilbert, can you talk about the crumbs of Metro? Thank you.
Very good, Gilbert. My friend. Well, stay with me if you'd like. But first of all, there's two things. It pains me to say that the SNAP benefits, which of course is food stamps, which of course is some of the people that are most vulnerable, especially in these times of high food prices, that I guess the federal government is going to discontinue sending this aid to the states,
mm-hmm.
and therefore they're going to be discontinuing the support to the people. Yeah. I mean, it's just horrible, Ruby.
It's terrible.
And there was like really very little notice.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever notice there is, it's so quick. It's not like there's some sort of ramp off for 6 months or something so people can adjust. And it's just awful what's going on. And you know what? Everyone knows I'm a Democrat. It's both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here we are. I don't even know what day it is now. It's probably now almost 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been no movement. And as one who flies for business, every time I fly now, there's always a problem because there's a ground stoppage. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is real.
Right.
When you don't have air traffic controllers able to work, I don't think they're getting paid. I'm not sure on that. So you can fact check me. And at least I'm acknowledging when I don't have the fact, unlike others. But the bottom line is I've had my son just coming from Baton Rouge was there because he was at LSU wanting to come home. And he was there at the airport for 3 hours and they had delays because of the air traffic controller situation. And are you ready for this? They canceled the flight.
That's terrible.
Part of me wants to say, if you knew there was going to be an air traffic controller situation, why don't you let the people know so at least they have the ability to not even be at the airport, or better yet, at least have the ability to start driving? Because it's just 5 hour drive, but he wasted more than three hours because he had to get to the airport, right, go through security and all those things. And by the time you do all of that, you wait 3 hours and then you get back home. It's 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't come home.
That's terrible.
Isn't it terrible?
Yeah.
And then two of my partners were there. I forgot what city they were. Oh, Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
They were in Corpus Christi and they were trying to get back to Houston because we were there seeing clients. And are you ready for this? They were there and it was almost 3 hours. I guess there's some kind of rule. And again, fact check me because I'm not sure. And I'll be one to admit it when mm-hmm. I don't have the fact. I think it's 3 hours and then they have to tell you or they have to then say no more. So the bottom line, it was just under 3 hours mm-hmm. and then they were able to take off. But by the time you're 3 hours and then, of course, you have your 45-minute flight and then you're stuck on the tarmac when you arrive because there's no gate for you to walk off on, they could have driven from Corpus Christi, Texas to Houston. Because, you know, I've done that drive many times because, of course, everyone knows I'm from Corpus Christi. And if you don't know, I'm from Corpus Christi. And Corpus Christi, Texas is no more than about three and a half hour drive.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what's going on, but they got to tell us. And here we are. I'm starting to see some of the things from my producer there. He was putting on some of the wonderful things about the sadness on the articles. At the end of the day, this is getting serious.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me wants to say, you know what? Just everybody get in one room. And if you make the members of Congress not leave that room until they have a deal and don't pay them and don't let them, you know, have any food or, you know, make them work. You know what? I have a feeling we'll reach a deal.
We would.
But what's interesting is on the House side, the House is not even in session because the Republican leadership has said, well, we already passed a resolution that says to extend it till I think it was late November. And so our work is done and it's up to the Senate. And of course, the Senate is saying, well, we want to pass the House bill. And the Democrats are saying, well, we want to have the extension of all the Obamacare stuff. At the end of the day, people are confused. At the end of the day, the people are the ones suffering.
Right.
You got to get them in a room and turn off the AC and, you know,
sweat it out
and they'll reach a deal.
Yeah.
But that's what it's probably going to take.
Right.
And so I'm going to go back to Bobby. I don't know if you're there or not, but I'm going to go back to your question. I'm not associated with Metro anymore, but I still bleed Metro blue, which means I love that organization. I love everybody there. And, you know, it's one of those things where they never are fully appreciated until there's a crisis, meaning there's no Metro service because of a hurricane or a storm. And everybody's like, what about Metro? We need more Metro. And they're never appreciated, Ruby, until, you know, it's rodeo or World Series or World Cup. And everybody's like, boy, we need more Metro to get down to the football stadiums. Where's Metro? And that's when everybody wants Metro. And of course, go ahead, Bobby, you go.
The main thing is no Metro. I can't get to your house with my laundry, Gilbert.
You can't get to 4030 Durness Way.
Where's my laundry?
No. Well, you know what? I appreciate that, my friend Bobby. Stay with me for a second, my friend. So let me just go through my Metro stuff because I want to answer your question. Because, you know, Metro makes this city move. And, you know, Bill Kring talked about, and I'm just talking about it because he wrote this thing and talked about ridership And he says here, ridership has improved this year. He goes, but it's still down 11% from pre-pandemic ridership levels. Well, guess what? Everything's down since pre-pandemic. I mean, the pandemic was a crisis. The country was closed for over a year. Ridership all over America is down. Everything's down. Restaurants are down. And so, well, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, everyone, you know, tax receipts are down. The city's at a budget deficit. I mean, everything's down. So I think it's just pretty outrageous to just sort of say these things in isolation. And then he attributes that 15% increase because of the Metro leadership under the Whitmire administration. It's not about that. It's about time. Mm-hmm. Now that the pandemic is getting further behind us, well, yeah, things are coming back to normal. Right. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, my goodness, don't mislead the people. And then what's really kills me is he talked about the ridership on the lines. Well, sure, I'm not happy with the purple and green lines riderships, but for him to just suggest that we're never going to receive FTA funding on light rail anymore, well, first of all, he doesn't know because he's not part of that process. Right, and number two, we probably would have, but for the fact that it was the Whitmire administration's people, and it's not the mayor, it's the people on that board, and it's not just the city appointees, it's all of them. They just decided to get out of line and to just say no more mass transit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the problem. So they're not going to get FTA funding because they got out of line.
That's right.
That's why. And then he talks a lot about, he says here, Uptown BRT has turned into a joke. And he said, the Uptown BRT was unquestionably the biggest waste of $200 million in Houston's history. But what he doesn't tell you, but he implies that it's a Metro, what he doesn't tell you is Metro didn't pay for that.
That's right.
Metro didn't pay for that BRT. The Uptown TERS did.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't see him, you know, beating up the Uptown TERS. Why? Because those are his friends.
Right.
And I don't see him talking about TERSes or a bad use of money, you know, because if you don't like it, well, then talk about what's real and don't mislead the people. Ultimately, Metro provided the buses. And remember, those buses are buses, so we can use them anywhere. And then, of course, the other thing is we've provided the drivers. Well, we have the drivers. We're in that business. So at the end of the day, it was the Uptown's money. And they're the ones that did all the planning and everything else. And, you know, as the former Metro chairman during those times, we were opposed to some of the things that they did.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to not have signal priority. What does that mean? Everybody should know that what makes mass transit work is it's reliable and it's frequent. Everybody knows that. It studies everywhere. It studies all over America on mass transit. And they're trying to slow down the pace of the red line. That's a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about, well, you have to wait 3 more minutes. No, it's about everything gets delayed.
Right.
And ultimately, what makes mass transit successful is to just be reliable and quick. Just like when you're at the airport. How many times have you done that shuttle to go from, like, I don't know, Terminal C to Terminal B, and you look up and you're waiting and you just missed that shuttle thing and you're like, doggone it. Well, guess what? You look up and you see in like 2 minutes it's coming.
Right.
So you don't feel bad. You know it's coming.
That's
if it were like 5 minutes or 8 minutes and you got to make a plane or someone's got to go to work or make an appointment, that can be all the difference sometimes,
right.
Or at least you feel that way, and that will make you not ride it.
That's right.
So at the end of the day, let me just continue. And so what it is the bus rapid transit, the whole point was for it to be quick, to go across the way from Uptown down towards right by the Galleria and 59 right there at 610. And to be quick, so people could get on and get off, and it's great. Well, guess what? The Uptown people decided that they did not want to mess up the traffic, and so the bottom line is it goes to a red light and it'll stop,
right?
Just like everybody else,
right?
Well, that defeats the whole purpose,
right?
Because the whole purpose is for people to get up and back fast,
right?
That was the purpose, and so at the end of the day, it was doomed to not have high ridership because again, it's too slow.
So it's the not so rapid.
It's the not so. Say that again. It's
the not so rapid.
Not so rapid bus rapid transit, and so it stops at all the lights whenever it's red. Again, I did not want that as Metro chairman. I said that makes no sense at all. And then, of course, the other thing is they did that bus rapid transit, which I supported it. Why? Because we were fighting with John Culberson, the congressman, and he was just continuing to prevent Metro from really expanding. And at the end of the day, everyone knows that until you connect the red line and all the rail with the bus rapid transit, until you connect all those centers, it's not going to be complete, and you're not going to have the ridership. Everybody knows it. I've said it many times. I said it when I was Metro chairman. And sure enough, they're not completing the east-west or what's called the University Line.
Right.
And we wasted, before my time at Metro, all this money studying it. And I just said, we're not going to study it anymore. Right. This is just a rope-a-dope way to waste money on studies to nowhere.
Right.
And we are just going to get in line, and we'll figure out whether it needs to go in Richmond or Alabama or whatever it needs to go east-west. But at the end of the day, till you connect the rail situation with the uptown, not situation, the rail network with uptown, you're never going to have that ridership.
Right.
Everybody should know that. So $200 million, is that high or low? At the end of the day, it's not like you just put in $200 million. You did all the streets. You put all the sidewalks. You did all the infrastructure. You did all these great improvements. When people talk about rail, oh, it's expensive. Of course it's expensive. But you know what you're doing? You're moving the utilities. You're upgrading all the sidewalk. You're doing all kinds of infrastructure improvements. And it wasn't even the city's dollars. It was uptown's. So that's the thing that's very frustrating. And I don't know how many more of these he's going to write, but at the end of the day, I'm going to correct the record each time because it's, you know, I understand it's disappointing. But the other thing is nobody predict the ridership. We all knew it wasn't going to be successful till you connect. We all knew it wasn't going to be successful unless you had signal priority, meaning it was faster than stopping at all the red lights. If you stop at all the red lights, you're just no different than a car.
Right.
And it's supposed to be bus rapid transit. That's the point. And then, of course, no one predicted the pandemic. And then, of course, there's been such high crime and so many problems in the Galleria area. Nobody predicted that either.
Right.
And so, or at least there's a perception. I don't know if it's reality or not. So, again, I just don't know. But I know one thing. You read about things all the time there. And whether it's true or not, again, if people don't feel comfortable, they're just not going to go as much. It's just the bottom line. And so continuing, I really think that if we're going to have a discussion and write about it, at least be factual. And, you know, could Metro improve and do things better? Of course they could, especially with this particular administration where they seem to be spending all their money on roads now. In other words, what is Metro doing worried about those rainbow crossrocks in Montrose area? Why is Metro changing all that?
They really? I didn't know
they're
that.
The ones doing it. It's like, why? Why are they doing that? I mean, is that the city's role?
Right.
And why is Metro, if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to do it at another time here, is going to give $100 million to road improvements and things. So essentially, it sounds like the mayor, or at least this board, is doing the same thing that Bob Lanier did, which is using Metro and all the money that was meant for mass transit to essentially spend money on roads and things for the city. That way the city can use that money, which is originally or should be for roads, to plug up their mismanaged budget. That's what's going on.
Wow.
Bobby, did you get all that? Because let me tell you,
Gilbert, in the world of Whitley Whitley, she said, if you don't give me the detail, Rich, I'll blow you all to bits.
There you go.
What'd you do?
Say that one more time, Bobby. I lost you.
If you don't give me the detail, Rich, I will blow you all to bits.
There you go, my friend. Well, Bobby, we appreciate you. Call us again, okay, my friend?
Thank you, Gilbert.
Thank you.
Keep your powder dry.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. And the whole thing is, he makes a statement. Let me find it here again. Boy, there's just so much in here, right, to go through. However, the growth of the last two decades has been concentrated in the suburbs with low density, population density. And therefore, he's essentially saying congregate, which means congested, you know, transit, does not work. Well, that's because there's been no transit. So that's what happens when there's no transit? Well, people move to the burbs. Why? Yeah. Because it's cheaper.
Right.
And because property taxes are a little bit lower. I mean, it just makes perfect sense. At the end of the day, you have these great centers, the medical center, all the stadiums, the zoo, Uptown, Greenway. You have downtown. At the end of the day, I can't help that the forefathers did not want zoning and therefore built all these centers everywhere instead of doing like a regular city like Chicago or New York. And by doing that, everything's spread out.
Right.
And so what's the, you know, the right thing to connect all of them and build the city back? And if you don't, what's going to happen? Well, they're all going to move to the suburbs.
Right.
And it's not because they just want to be there. It's because you don't have the mass transit to connect all these things. So, of course, that's where the migration is. Whereas in other cities, they have mass transit in the inner city. So let's go back. We have a caller here. Is there a Jennifer on the line?
Yes.
Jennifer, you got me, Gilbert Garcia. My guest who's running for city council, that's a real bad sign, though, Ruby, that he can't make his own radio interview, but he's running for city council, at large, mind you.
Oh, wow.
But at the end of the day, let's keep going. In the spirit of not bashing anyone, I won't mention his name, even though it's position two, but I won't say his name. Here we go. I'm going to protect the guilty. But going back, so we've been talking a little bit about mass transit. I've got my partner, Ruby Dang, here because she's my great stand-in. We talked a little bit about being empty nesters. We talked a little bit about Metro. But, Jennifer, what do you got for Houston and Harris County right now? And for Houston and Harris County, please call in. If you've got something you want to say about being an empty nester or something about Metro, call in. And call in, of course, to 832-570-8075. The number's on the screen. Jennifer, what do you got?
Yeah, so I wanted to, like the first part of the show today was so heartwarming and so feeling regarding like the kids and being an empty nester. It's so full of all kinds of mixed emotions for a parent. So I would like to ask for like for a young kid, like someone who is possibly going to college or trying to start in the career currently in this world, what would be your best tip or best like advice or wisdom in terms of how to keep your head high and kind of just like keep being hopeful in this kind of heavy world right now? It's like it feels challenging and at times what would be the best even keep going?
I appreciate that, and I will say this, Jen, if I can call you Jen, first of all,
yes.
I do believe that there are better days, and the best days of this world and this city and this community and this country are yet ahead still. I refuse to fall into the depression of, well, the country's going through this and there's all these conflicts in the world and, you know, there's global warming and so forth. And all those things are true. I'm not belittling any of them. But at the end of the day, I believe the best days are ahead of us. And if you look at whether it's medical science and all the things that we're doing for our health and all the innovations on making people live better, stronger, eat better, all of those things. And I do believe that all the new technology and all the new things at our fingertips, whether it's smartphones and computers, excuse me, or AI, are going to be used. Of course, there are some people that will abuse it, but will be used for good and for advances in the world. And I do believe that the world is getting smaller. And therefore, with the internet, we're all starting to learn more about the values of democracy. And I do believe that that's a real good thing to solve conflicts in the world. I'm very optimistic in the world. And so what I would do is tell young people, don't buy into all the being down and out. I know all those things are true. My view would be what employers are looking for more than anything else. And of course, we've just hired five people at our firm in the last, 2 months, right? And now we're at 40. Is we can teach people our industry. We can teach people how to do spreadsheets and look at the Bloomberg and the markets, but you cannot teach just having a positive outlook and a positive attitude and a positive good work ethic. So if I were young people, I would say, remember what's important. More than anything else, you want to be happy in life. And don't chase the dollar. Don't think about, well, I want to make a lot of money. And everyone wants to do well successfully and so forth. But at the end of the day, there's nothing more important than being grounded as a human being, you know, being grounded in your faith, taking care of your family, and really just you know, having a good attitude and being happy in your life. Jen, if you're happy in your life, young people, you're going to be successful. And if you're doing something that you're successful at, you're going to, you know, the monetary awards and all the things that are necessary to define success as you see it will all come. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Ruby? I mean, sometimes, you know, I saw and I see young people, they get caught up in the, well, golly, you got to start applying for jobs 2 years early or internships at 2 years early. And I do regret that that is true. But at the end of the day, stay true to you. Get prepared and be, you know, one more thing, I'm going to tangent, is the other thing I look for is someone who believes in something bigger than themselves, whether it's they were involved in public service, volunteering, or whether they were involved in team sports. Because when you do those things, you believe in something much bigger than the solo satisfaction. But there's an end goal to the whole team, to get to the Super Bowl, the World Series, for the firm to do well and have a good year and so forth. But Ruby, what do you say?
Yeah, no, I agree with all of it, Gilbert. And in fact, that was a conversation we were having with my daughter this weekend, because of course, you know, she's a junior, and so she's nearing the end. And so those are, you know, things that are of interest to her. You know, is she going to find something, you know, some type of employment? Is, you know, what direction should she go towards? And she's been doing all the things, you know, of making sure that she's has a good resume, right? But what is she here? Because, again, you know, you're always around your friends and you get feedback from them. Well, many of them are having difficulties finding a position. So it just takes that. You know, all the encouragement we give them, all the preparation, you know, to build them up, it just takes one or two of their peers to tell them, I'm having a hard time. And all of that kind of goes out the window. So, you know, the reality is there that, you know, things are slowing down. And historically, again, she goes to A&M, so it's a really big network type community. So there's always a lot of feedback from some of the alum, and it's always been really great, right? And it continues to be, but they're seeing some, you know, I don't know if that's the right term, cracks, right? And it really instills fear in mm-hmm. the graduating classes. And so, again, had all of this conversation with her, giving her the exact same advice you just said. But I could still see in her face that, you know, I hear it. I think that's great. I'm going to take all that you're giving me to move forward. But, you know, friend so-and-so, follow the same path, and they're still trying to find employment. So, you know, I'd say always keep your spirits up high. You never know when an opportunity presents itself. Always be prepared. Be positive. And, you know, but that's part of life, right? Sometimes you have ups and sometimes you have downs, and you just have to work through them.
And my other view too, stay with us, Jen, is remember, this is just a microcosm of her life,
mm-hmm.
this period right now. But life is a long journey.
Right.
And so there's up and downs in everybody's life. I have up and downs even now.
Right.
And I'm 62.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, again, positive attitude, being grounded. And my view is be happy, whatever that might mean. Be happy. And if you're not happy, talk to someone about it. There's all sorts of support out there to, you know, in our lives and in time, we've always spent so much money on our physical health
mm-hmm.
and our physical appearance. And you see nothing but ads about beauty products and hair products and all these things and clothing and everything for the outer self. But there's not enough focus on the inner self and the soul, the feelings, the mind, the brain, and all the feelings involved. And we need to spend a lot more time on the inner self and fulfilling that. And my view is, if you're having some thoughts, talk to somebody about that. Whether it's your parents, I'm glad she spoke to you. Mm-hmm. Whether it's your priest or your rabbi, or whether it's, you know, your minister, whether it's your teacher. There's all sorts of people to talk to about, you know, hey, I'm having these feelings, and, you know, what advice do you have for me? And so, young people, there is so much to look forward to. And I do believe medical science and science in general is just scratching the surface on such major changes that are going to benefit the world at large. As it relates to the conflicts in the world, you know, I'm hopeful that things in the Middle East will settle down. Yep. I am so hopeful and praying for things in Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. And let's hope that more conflicts do not arise. They probably will. But you know what? They've had for thousands of years here in this planet. It's how you navigate those. And at least we have a forum like the United Nations and other things to at least bring things forward and bring attention and light to it. So, Jen, I don't know if I answered your question or asked me a follow-up of anything you want there.
Hello. Oh, these are phenomenal, yes. Phenomenal wisdom, and thank you so much. I feel like it should be somewhere summarized and put in a book possibly, or somewhere so people could watch it more, like repeat, because it should be truly on repeat, possibly to be able to even like see every morning as a motivation. So wonderful. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, Jen, thank you. And I hope you call in again. So thank you for your call and thank you for your attention there. So again, Houston, we're 832-570-8075. We're doing our best to fill in. We had a candidate for city council position 2, and he ghosted me. I mean, what can I tell you? That's a bad sign,
yeah,
right?
Yep.
I mean, my goodness. But, you know, that's okay. You know why? Because the show must go on. But you know what? When you have a candidate who goes to you, there's always a good city council person who's on Johnny on the spot.
That's right.
Who's ready to be on and ready to talk about what's going on in the city.
Right.
And now we have councilman, I think he's the councilman, Julian Ramirez. Councilman, are you there?
I'm here, Gilbert. How are you?
Man, it's so great to have you. Talk
you
to
bet.
Me. What are you up to these days? And, you know, what's on your mind there on council? And what are the two or three things that you're working on? And, of course, anything you want to say about anything on the upcoming elections, anybody that you're supporting or anything, we want to go ahead and get that out there because you're such a good man. And we, you know, I think it's important for people to hear your views.
Well, Gilbert, you're so kind, always. I enjoy hosting your show the one time a few weeks ago. I've been on your show, and you're always so kind and gracious. And let me assure you and all of your listeners, we are on the job working hard. And something you said this morning really caught my attention. You were bringing light to the loss of SNAP benefits and how that's going to affect thousands of Houstonians. And thank you for doing that. You know, this is something that's beyond the city's control, you know, the difficulties we're having at the federal level and getting people to come together and do what needs to be done. And Houstonians are going to suffer for it, unfortunately. But thank you for bringing attention to it. I wanted to share with you some things that we've been doing.
Please.
To try to bring people together. And I have to give a shout out to my chief of staff, Leah Wolfthal. And this points out how important it is to have great staff working with you. So months ago, we started convening some of the nonprofits that work in this field in anticipation of the loss of SNAP benefits for Houstonians. And what has precipitated this, or I should say what has accelerated this, has been the federal shutdown. So we're going to see people being kicked off of SNAP benefits very, very soon. In fact, we have been in contact with the Houston Food Bank. They are already in crisis mode. We've been in contact with United Way, with the Greater Houston Community Foundation, the Jewish Family Services, and a number of other nonprofits trying to figure out what can be done, maybe not in an official capacity, but what can these groups do to get mobilized to address the the coming crisis. And I can tell you, Gilbert, that information we've received that is, as of today, if the shutdown continues beyond today, about 15,000 Houstonians are going to lose their benefits every day.
Oh, my goodness.
And, yeah, so we have brought this to the mayor's attention, and they are aware of it. We will see what happens in the coming days and weeks, but this is serious. You know, we need to impress upon our leaders in Congress of the importance of getting together and getting this figured out. You know, we need to rise above our differences and confront the issues. Well, and so thank you for bringing awareness to this, Gilbert, because it's something we've been thinking about.
Yeah, stay with me, Councilman, and I appreciate that. I didn't mean to cut you off. You know, and again, it's one of those things that it's a bipartisan responsibility, which is both sides. That's what I mentioned to Ruby. We just got to get them all in the room, turn off the AC, and make them work till they come up with something. Because at the end of the day, it's real people. 15,000, that's a big number. Think about all the people that they touch and what that means for the community at large. Go back to something, because I think it's really important. So you mentioned the food bank is now obviously, I guess the right word is really overwhelmed, because they're getting ready for this onslaught of people who are going to need support. And, you know, what are they doing differently? I guess it's just get ready for the onslaught, right? And I guess if you said the deadline, and you didn't use this word, but if the sort of the semi-deadline is tomorrow, because then things are in play, it looks pretty for sure it's going to be, you know, dragging out beyond that.
Yeah. As I was saying, beginning November 1st, you know, each day 15,000 folks are going to lose their access to SNAP benefits. And in anticipation, the Houston Food Bank has already activated its disaster response team, right? And they're having a tough time right now anyway, given some of the federal budget cuts. So they're having to try to ramp up their fundraising efforts. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the Houston Food Bank. We've been contacted by Meals on Wheels, which serves tens of thousands of folks, not only in Houston, but throughout the area. They're not able to serve the people that have come to depend on their visits and their meals delivered. And so it's a big deal. You know, we need to get this federal shutdown over with.
It is a big, big deal, Councilman.
Get on with serving people.
I want to give you an opportunity for a little plug, if you don't mind, because I know your chief of staff, Leah, and she's first class. And, you know, I knew her because she ran for council when I ran for mayor. And I knew her because she was supporting a candidate that I was supporting. And that's when I first met her. In many ways, and if this is an unfair statement, please correct me, Councilman. Most members of council can only be as effective as their staff. And it really starts at the top with that chief of staff and your scheduler and your community outreach people, the case managers and all that. You got a good one there.
Absolutely.
Am I right about that?
Especially, yes, absolutely. Whether you're a district council member or at large, every week we have a meeting. We have 50 new items on the agenda that we have to get prepared for so that we can vote intelligently on. We need to try to anticipate problems coming down the road and deal with a strong mayor and our form of government. You absolutely need a great staff. And Leah does a terrific job. As I say, she anticipated these issues arising, and we've been convening these groups for months, right? Only recently has the situation become more dire because of the shutdown.
Well, I want to give you a chance for something. I don't mean to interrupt you again. I apologize. Mm-hmm. I think she's running for council next year. Am I right or am I wrong?
In 27, right? So the next regularly scheduled election, she'll be running to succeed Sally Alcorn, who's been great for the city, but will be term limited at the end of this term. And so Leah will be candidate for at-large position 5 on Houston City Council. That's right.
And that election is when?
2027.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's essentially we got to go through this year, and then it'll be the following after that. Very good. Well, you
correct.
Know what? I want to have her on the show because maybe it's too early, but as they say, it's never too early. Mm-hmm. Just to talk about what she thinks are some of the big issues about the city and what she thinks what a chief of staff just needs to be. Well, I'm going to give you the last word here. Yeah, you let her know.
Let her know. Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. So last word, Gilbert.
Yes, sir.
Well, two last words. One, I feel for you on the empty nester thing. I think I've told you. When I went off to college, when I was graduated from high school, I was the last to leave the house, and it really hit my mom hard. Major depressive episode, and she ended up being hospitalized. It's hard.
It is.
It's hard. So I feel for you. Hang in there. You've got Dee Dee, and to help you through that, to help help each other through that. So best wishes on that. Last thing, Gilbert, is we have an election going on right now. There is a city council position on the ballot. It is at large four. People need to research the candidates, do their homework. What I am most concerned with is that Houstonians elect someone who is honest, ethical, who's going to work hard, and who has the best interests of the city at heart. So I encourage Houstonians to do their homework, take it seriously, and go vote for the best candidate.
Do you have anyone you want to say in mind? If you don't, that's okay, and I don't want to put you on the spot.
I'm going to let Houstonians pick their top two, because with 15 candidates, we know we're going to have a runoff, and then once we determine who those top two are, then we'll take another look at it.
Well, that's very good. I'm happy to get your views out there into the public. And go. I want to give you, I think I know the answer, but you were one of how many children?
Seven.
So when your mom...
I was the last of seven to leave the house.
Then I can only imagine if I'm like feeling this way and I have four, imagine seven wonderful kids.
Wow.
And then here's your baby, you know, Julian. And then all of a sudden he's gone. And it's like...
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. Well,
it's a painful memory.
I'm there, my friend. Well, thank you for calling in, my friend, and we'll have you back.
Hang in there.
Yes,
hang
sir.
In there, Gilbert. Okay, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Councilman. Do we have another caller there already?
Yeah.
Was there a Robert? Robert, are you there?
I am, Gilbert. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Robert. You got me, Gilbert Garcia, the tip for me with Ruby Dang. We've talked a little bit about city council issues and the chief of staff and their role. We talked a lot about Metro and all those Metro haters that are just obsessed. It's putting out bad information or not the complete information. And we talked, of course, about being an empty nester. We didn't cover the Texans winning, but we could throw that in there too. What do you got for us, my friend?
Well, after your conversation with the city council person at large, and you had one that came in MIA, I wanted to call and express how important, I didn't realize how important the city council person at large was until Councilperson Carter's office helped me out, and I live in a different district. I'm like, wow, okay, so that's what this at large people do. They actually are like somewhat of a support team for the other city council because they can work anywhere they see a need. So there's a street across the Shepherd called Cold Quit.
Mm-hmm.
The residents on that street decided that they don't want anyone parking in front of their houses, so they have trash cans and orange cones blocking parking in front of their house. There's a popular coffee shop on the corner of Cold Quit and Shepherd. I don't want to mention the name.
Okay.
But my wife and I, we'll go there a couple of times a week. And I try not to bother their cones, and I park on the you know, without hitting the cones. And one day I parked like that, and somebody hit my car because I couldn't get close to the curb. So I'm like, okay, well, why did it happen? So I emailed the city council person, and I attached the five at large positions on the email. And after about a couple of months, they're just permitting them to do it, from my understanding. Nobody is making them stay in compliance. And this is something I didn't know. The trash can can't be out in front of your house all the time. It has to be out 24 hours before they pick it up and remove the same day they pick it up. I didn't know that. They could mm-hmm. give you a citation. But they have trash cans, orange cones, orange barriers, and I'm just looking for some help for an at-large person or anyone like that that could help me. So but the purpose for my call today was to say thank you to all the at-large positions, because I did not realize how important they are.
Well, stay with us for a second. So you brought up a couple things. First and foremost, at-large is critical because they have the ability to pick their lanes. In other words, when you're a district council person, there might be a particular intersection in your district or a particular school in your district, and it may have lots of, you know, issues or challenges or things of that nature. And so they have to focus on those things. But when you're an at-large, you really are ombudsman, essentially an advocate, yes. advocate for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, they can pick and choose their lanes. And so my view is I would go to the district council person there, but also the at-large, because they're the ones that can really pick up the torch of an issue. And as it relates to that issue, that's an interesting one. I kind of know that area, mm-hmm. but I understand the frustrations of those neighborhoods about people are parking on our streets and so forth. But at the end of the day, you know what I want to say to them is, you know what? That's why you got to support zoning. Because, you know, people who say, oh, no zoning, everybody says, oh, we don't want zoning until it affects their neighborhood. And, of course, that's really the issue, because you have businesses next to schools, next to residential, and some of those businesses are not the kind you want to have around kids. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it comes down to. But you are an innocent, victim. Hold that thought, because there you are complying with, well, there's cones and this and that. And then what happened? You got hit. Mm-hmm. My goodness. I didn't mean to cut you off. What'd you want to say there, my friend?
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. My frustration is that no one is addressing the issue.
Mm-hmm.
They'll tell you, well, we sent someone out and we talked to the neighbors, and, you know, a parking management someone and someone from waste management for the trash. Well, great. I appreciate you going out there talking to them. But did you put them in compliance?
Right. That's a very, very good point about what are the rules, and can neighbors just do that? And if they just
no, and this is what I want to say, Gil. It'd be different if it was one of those seedy kind of businesses where it attracts unwanted people to your neighborhood.
Right.
I can agree with that 100%. But we're talking about a coffee shop.
Right.
How long would you stay at the coffee shop? 30, 45 minutes? You drink your coffee, you get in your car, and you leave?
Right.
So it's not like they're getting loud music or unscrupulous people or shady characters or midnight people parking out in front of your property. It's dark. You don't know what's going on. This is a freaking coffee shop.
Yeah, and it's my understanding, of course, you correct me if I'm wrong, that parking on the street should be available to the public. In other words, that's public right away. In other words, no one should have the right to say, I'm going to close off my front of my house and no one can ever park there. I don't think you can do that.
You can't do that. And I am a victim, for lack of a better term, of the same thing. The house buried right next to me was bought by an investor. He turned it into an Airbnb. Mm. I had parking in front of my house all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Airbnb didn't work out for him. So what did he do? He leased it to 5 college students from the University of Houston.
Mm.
When you got 5 cars in a single driveway, there's always a car in front of my house.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can do.
Right.
They're legally parked. They're not doing anything wrong. But there's nothing you can do.
And, of course, 5 college students all have 1 friend each.
Yeah.
So and so, again, because there's no mass transit, they all have to take a car. So there's another 5 cars. And where are they? In front of your house.
Mm-hmm.
It
doesn't bother me because they're nice. They're not loud. They're very respectful. They speak. You know, they ask me, do I need help when I'm bringing my groceries in? You know, it's just another neighbor that has a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I have nothing to complain about.
What's interesting is for the people that are putting those cones to block off their streets, I wonder if the city has an obligation, if it's brought to the city's attention, to make them pull down those cones.
Well, I brought it to their attention, and what they say is they went out and spoke to them, but they didn't make them remove the cones.
Mm-hmm. Well, my response to that is, so what was the point of going out there and talking to them if they weren't going to do anything?
Well, not tomorrow, but next Tuesday, I will be addressing city council with that question.
Oh, I think that's a good thing. I'm so glad you're doing it. What I'd love to do, if you don't mind, you're going to be there next Tuesday? Or you mean like tomorrow?
No, not tomorrow.
The next Tuesday.
The following Tuesday.
Okay, do me a favor. The following Monday, would you call in and give us an update? I want to know what happened.
I sure will. And
I want to know what, you know, and this is what this show is for. It's about, you know, getting people information, getting people to talk about things that should be better, correcting the record, getting our public officials to work for the public. So we just want to know what was the response from some of those council people and you know, what's the mayor's response and where is it going to go? Because it really is an issue of it's beyond the street and it's beyond the coffee shop. And it's really about, do people have the ability to change the access to the street and who can park there or not? And I don't mean one time. I mean, you know, it's just people, can they just do that? Well, please call in because I want to know.
Gilbert, I listen to you absolutely every Monday. I will call in and give you an update.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. I'm hugging you on the phone. Thank you so much.
Okay.
We got almost time. Oh, we got, we have one more thing I want to mention, which is back to this Metro haters, right, and Bill King's piece. He says here, the idea that transit can be used to somehow transform urban development patterns or will ever be viable alternative to the automobile is delusional. Well, guess what? How do you know? There's been nothing but open warfare on Metro since the dawn of time.
Right.
And when Metro first got going, it was supposed to have one penny sales tax, mm-hmm. and Bob Lanier took one quarter of that permanently.
Yep.
So how do you know?
Right.
And there's no zoning, so it's just been mass hysteria. And, you know, what about, can you say that about New York or can you say that about Chicago? It sure seems like it,
it has great success there. Right?
That's right. And why? Well, because people embrace it,
mm-hmm.
Starting with the founding forefathers, unless what your main objective is, you want the inner city to decay and you want to foster spreading out people and demographics for political power or for things of that nature, or you have an interest in buying land out in the suburbs and developing it and making money. You know, it's always about money somehow.
It's always about money.
If that's really your motivation, well, you're accomplishing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're really looking at the success of the city and demographic patterns, and you really want to foster urban development, well, we're not doing it the right way.
That's
the whole point. We have no real mass transit. We already know the system isn't complete. It doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
We know that. So, you know, let's quit fighting it. There's been federal money allocated to mass transit cities all over America, and we've gotten very little.
Mm-hmm.
And the point is, you can have your holier-than-thou approach of, well, it's a waste of money. The bottom line is the government has decided to make that investment in mass transit. And so do you want it here? Or do you want it to go to Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
I love Dallas. Or do you want it to go to New York or Chicago? I mean, the bottom line, I love those cities. But the point is, do you want to create jobs here, capacity, development, fix the streets, sidewalks, and all this here or not?
Right.
Already, if it's my understanding that Texas gives more tax revenue from Texas to the federal government than we receive back.
Right.
We're a net donor state.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Mayor Parker told us when she was on the air last week or 2 weeks ago. So you know what, Ruby? We're already out of time. I want to make sure everybody knows to make sure you're listening to me. Every Saturday we rebroadcast on Comcast 97, AT&T 99, Phonoscope 96, Suddenlink 99, HMSTV.org. I know we had two or three people waiting. I so apologize. We ran out of time already. And of course, don't forget, my favorite carne asada is Laredo Taqueria. Let me tell you guys, I'm not kidding. 6904 Irvington. If you haven't been there, Ruby, You've probably been there.
I've been there.
But if you haven't been there, you know, I know there's always a lot of people in line.
There's always a lot.
But guess what? It goes fast.
That's right.
And here's the most important thing of all. It's worth it.
It is worth it.
You know when they always say, worth it. Yes. It's worth it.
It is worth it.
And so my friends out there, can I say damn? Damn, you make some good kind of salad. I don't know if I can say that or not. If I'm not able to say that, I won't say it again. I promise. Anyways, so here we are. It's already time. This is Gilbert Garcia saying we'll see you next time. All right, Houston, Harris County, this is Gilbert Garcia of A Tip from Gilbert, Talk, Inspiration, and Prayer. We're going to now be on television. We will air every Saturday on Comcast 17, AT&T Channel 99, Phonoscope Channel 96, Suddenlink 99, and also HMSTV.org. Every new episode every Saturday at 7 p.m. And follow me on social media. See you then.